lineouts, racks.
Pulls, engage!
What an amazing try!
Tries and tackles, dissected by South Africa's top rugby minds.
That is world class!
This is To The Last Drop, your weekly in-depth rugby podcast with Liam Delcombe and Brendan Nell.
Brendan, we have a show with, it's not really a difference because we often have a guest. Last week we didn't, but this week we have a very special guest. We were hoping to get him onto our show last week, but we failed. The man is clearly very busy, but we were able to persuade Stephen Kutsoff, the recently retired Springbok and Stormers loose head prop, to sit down and have a chat with us. And we had a very good chat.
Yeah, it was interesting. And to Stephen's credit, I must say, he did make an appointment with us and then got stuck at a golf day, which I'm sure he said there must have been a sand trap somewhere that he got stuck at.
There's always a green surrounded by water.
Yeah. So he, to his credit, he did come back to us and we arranged to have a chat as well. So he kept his promise and... Yeah, let's have a listen. We had a great chat with him. Joining us today is a man who needs no introduction, the holder of a number of records, including the most appearances for the box off the bench. Also one of only, I think it's four players who's played in two winning World Cups every single game, and the Springbok legend, Stephen Kutsoff. Welcome. We've been trying to get hold of you, but you've been a busy man, very popular since you've been retired.
Thanks, Brendan. No, really appreciate it. And I've been... We're playing a lot of golf in my off time, so it's been amazing.
Is the golf getting any better?
not really. I feel like it's getting worse. It feels like I need to retire from golf as well. Like it's not positive at the moment.
Okay. Steve, obviously, illustrious career, a long path that you've walked, not just as a pro player, but also with the Springboks. The part of processing all of this, the having to move on, is that done, or do you think that will still take some time?
No, I think it will take some time. I've had a couple of months since I've got injured, had the operation done. There's been a couple of months where I've been processing and working through the emotions. I've gotten bad news from the doctor, like from day one. And like, it was always just about like trying to work through the rehab, the recovery, hopefully getting better. But as things stand at the moment, it didn't. And so I had a couple of months just to like try and process and think about it and try and find ways to keep myself busy. Outside of the rugby space.
I think, Stephen, I mean, for those people who don't know, I mean, you obviously, the prognosis was, I think it was something millimeters away from not being able to walk again. Obviously not news that any player wants to hear at any stage of their life. But from that time to now, as Liam says, processing it is, and you say still processing it. When did you take that decision? You and your family and your wife and that obviously had chats and looking ahead, there's hopefully no lasting concerns as such with the neck injury.
Yeah, so there's always a possibility of like worsening or muscle atrophy, so where things start going bad or pear-shaped. So I've had the conversation with my missus since the injury, like where I said, like, listen, if everything goes well with the operation and I do tend to feel better, like I will really take a long process and like put extended time on my rehab so I can make sure that the next fine, because it was not a great feeling sitting there in the specialist room and like chatting to him and like saying like, this is, I've seen Oaks in car crashes who's got less damage than you, but aren't able to breathe or needs apparatus to breathe or try and stay alive. So it was like, all those things went through my head and I was thinking and chatting with my missus and my folks and her folks just about like, I mean, rugby was such a short bit of my life. It was 15 years of playing extremely hard rugby every weekend, very limited rest time, into a thinking of, but what's the next 30, 35, 40 years looking like? And I didn't want to put that in jeopardy because I wanted to play another 3 years of rugby because things could have gone really bad if I had re-injured myself or got another neck injury. So that was mainly the swing decision where it was, am I going to give it a full go or am I going to just like focus on quality of life, focus on my career outside and then put it to bed and then Yeah, and that's basically how we came to the decision.
If the injury didn't arrive, what in your mind was going to be the best time to step away?
Yeah, I probably, like, you know, ideal, perfect world, I would have gone to try and make the next World Cup, and then probably thought of, like, maybe retiring from international rugby and just playing a bit of club rugby for a couple more years and just trying to finish like that. So my, like, in my head always had, like, 36, 37 would have been, like, ideal situation to retire. By then, hopefully, like, played enough games, made enough memories, traveled the world enough. But for me, it was a bit earlier. But, yeah, for me, it was trying to play another 5 years. Like, it was, that was in the back of my head. That's what I wanted to do. But, yeah, unfortunately, didn't plan out like that.
A lot of players, we hear it a lot of players struggle with leaving the game and going on to that next phase in their life. And I know there's been a lot of talk with my players about trying to prepare players for that and that. Have you had those sort of conversations with people, sort of what's next, and yeah, and just looking at how they transition and how difficult is it so far for you? I mean, I know that all the attention's now in your retirement, but in a couple of weeks' time, probably that's all going to die down.
Yeah. To be honest, like, I've been thinking about this day probably from, like, when I was 28, 29 years old. I started thinking, like, flip, I'm more than halfway through my career. Like, if I had to play till 35, 36, I need to start making some plans to create a small, smooth transition. It was about building something outside of rugby where I can always, like, spend a couple of hours a week focusing on, and that's how Bomb Squad happened. That's how the business with me and my brother started. So I was always thinking about things that I can almost fall back onto if rugby comes to an end. It was a bit earlier than expected, but it was still, at least those things were already starting to gain a bit of momentum. So for me, like, in the last 6 months, it was when I found out I got injured, I knew it was going to be like an extended period. I literally just threw myself into that. I was like, literally went from seeing the specialist on a Monday, almost took a day just to process it. And then the Wednesday, I, like, started grabbing meetings and I started chatting to people, trying to improve the Bomb Squad entire brand around it, trying to grab meetings for the family business. And then I would just, like, spend all my time in that, and it was literally, like, wake up 7 o'clock in the morning, do my rehab, do my gym work, and then go meet people and work corporate life. I haven't figured it out yet, but it's, like, it's getting there.
Before explaining to our listeners and viewers about Bomb Squad, there's people who may not know. Please tell us, in your playing days now being over, what are you going to miss most about play?
Yeah, I think probably just being, like, in a team environment. Like, you don't think about it much when you're playing, but when you're outside of the group and you're outside of the circles, like, you do tend to miss the guys a lot. Like, you miss those early morning locker room chats, like how sore the body is from the previous day's live scrumming and the breakdown drill we did yesterday. And, like, I think I'm going to miss that. And I'm probably going to miss the most as well is those conversations you have in the shower when you just won a game, holding a beer, taking a nice shower and, like, just chatting rugby. And I think those were, like fond memories and things that happened. You talk about the game, you talk about what's happening after, and you talk about, like, you just build, like, pure connection with your friends that you play this combative sport with. And I think I'm going to miss those the most.
And it's time for some shameless promotion here. Bomb Squad, please explain to our community.
Yeah, so Bomb Squad is a brand developed by myself and Malcolm, with my wife doing all the marketing and social media for us. So it just started as an idea to create our own beer. First of all, like, it was a side project or a passion project that we wanted to start. Started as a found a brewery called Saggy Stone that was interested in producing the beer for us or making the beer for us, and then we just developed the brand around it. But from there onwards, it went into e-commerce. We're selling online, and we're doing some very nice licensing deals as well. So yeah, it's developed into a nice brand, something we hope could stand the test of time and actually create something special. And yeah, that's basically how the entire Bomb Squad business built into where it's now.
That's so, got a point. comment you made there, standing the test of time. I see where you go with that.
I was going to say, that sounds rather familiar. I've heard that somewhere before.
Yeah.
Some good friends of us.
Might get in trouble from our friends.
Oh, maybe Tommy and them will come and do some business with you guys anyway. So
I hope so.
Kitsy, I mean, you look at this past, I mean, Springbok rugby the past 7-odd years has been really amazing, especially from where it was. And you were there as well in the beginning when we went through those, well, Springboks went through those dark times, of the 57 nils and those sort of bad memories. Have you been able to process just what a wonderful journey it has been in? I'm sure you're still going to think back about all the old war stories at some point. But, I mean, this is truly some remarkable achievements in the last couple of years for this team, this group of players.
100%. I think how when Rassie and Jock came into the picture, like management and coaching staff, I think they just changed everyone's mindset into creating this team that can just win. I think we've achieved unbelievable things over the last 6-7 years. I think this country is something special, and it's awesome to rep your country on the biggest stage. So for me, I think I've been fortunate enough in my career to play among some of the best players in the world. I've been, if you think about the Ibans, the Frans Malarabas, the Malcolms, I think those Oaks are just world-class rugby players. And for me, it was a massive honor just to rep and stand next to him and work in a team that just thrives on being successful and winning. So, I think probably, as you said, like probably going to still think about it a lot in the future and still talk about it a lot in the future. But I've just been super blessed in my entire career just to be able to play with a team that's this good and this, like, just this amazing, like this amazing team.
It's also been an amazing transformation for some players, yourself included. If you go back to 2016, I think in your first 10 tests, there must have been 6 or 7 defeats. So it wasn't as if that initial period was just a bed of roses. It was a hard slog. And then obviously a couple of things happened for you to go and become a successful team under a new coach. That journey obviously is one that takes many twists and turns. I mean, was there a time initially where you thought, geez, I mean, I really wanted to play for the Bucks, but, we need to keep our chins up here?
Yeah, thinking back, like my first season, 2016, it was tough. Like my first game was against Ireland. We managed to claw a win through there. And then it was all positive, like won the series against Ireland. And then from there, it went a bit sideways, and a lot of negativity came around the box at that stage. So it was tough. It was never felt like I don't want to play for the Bucks because of a certain results or certain management style or the performances. It was still like a massive honor just to represent, and for us as a group, and we had quite a young group at that stage of guys who's hungry to play, willing to play, who's done extremely well at their franchises, but maybe not that well in a Springbok jersey. So it was all about like just trying to find our feet. Like we struggled. We lost some big games against like record scores against New Zealand, which was never great. But I think a lot of those Oaks who went through that turned it around somehow and managed to get an awesome win against the All Blacks at Wellington, and then went on to win the World Cup. So even though it was new management in charge, but it was still the core group was still the same. So the guys never doubted that it was just a bad moment in Springbok rugby.
That record, the 54 appearances off the bench, I mean, I think it surprised me a bit because you've been quite this team for such a long time. And I know in the team environment, the bomb squad thing where it doesn't really matter which front row you play in. You're still part of it, and you guys often play 40-40, like that. But did it surprise you to know that you beat Ollie LaRue's record? And does it feel different that to say 54 games off the bench?
No, I think it's just you're still part of that match day 23. I think that's all that mattered for me. Like it was just to be involved on the weekend. I knew my role off the bench was to go and finish the game or bring energy when we need it, but for me, it didn't really matter. Like, it was, if I daunted the or played in the number one jersey or I played in the 17 jersey, it was the same. I had the same job on the weekend. It was to go out, play, give everything, bring energy. So yeah, for me, like, it was a lot of games off the bench, but I wouldn't change it for anything.
I'm not referring to your beer in this instance, but what do you think is the key ingredient to the bomb squad success?
Yeah, I think as Brandon said earlier, like, it was two amazing front rows. So it was, you had two pack of forwards that could at any stage start in a Springbok jersey or in any test match. So I think the key was, like, the guys knew exactly what they needed. So we would have, like, at halftime, Rassie would have like a 5-minute conversation just with the guys on the bench and talk to, like, what's needed from us, like, what type of energy we need to bring, how we need to finish this game. And the guys actually took that role very seriously. Like, it was, because a lot of games gets won or lost in that last 20 minutes. I think we saw it over the last year or so with Test rugby. It's those final 10 minutes when guys are tired, that's when you make the most mistakes. And I think that was our role, was to, like, we'll be fresh 8 guys on the field, but there will still be 7 other guys who's quite fatigued and might slack a bit. And then our role was just to keep those guys' energy high and make sure we fill the gaps we needed and make sure we get around the corner we needed. So that was our job. We needed to bring energy, play well, make sure we stick to the game plan. And then the guys who's been playing for 60 odd minutes, make sure their energies are lifted and look after them to finish out the game.
I remember asking you before the last World Cup final, it was in that strange community hall. I think you guys stayed like 45 minutes or so outside Paris. And the question really was about, you know, the impact of this bomb squad and the role it would play in achieving success for the Springboks. And you spoke about taking the other team to dark places.
Yeah.
Was that a thing that you would try to do in every test? Because, I mean, it's obviously, it's physically demanding. And it places a high premium on, I suppose, body and mind.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think, like, that famous quote of Rassie, like, effing the Oaks up physically, that was 100%. Like, that's where you take them to a dark place. Like, you don't relax. You don't give them an opportunity to breathe. And, like, that was our role. Like, it was bringing energy, like, keeping the physicality up there, and then just making sure, like, it's no room to breathe. Like, that last 20 minutes must be hell for them.
Stephen, just, I mean, you obviously there's Ox is now around still. Gerard Steiner coming through. There's some real, your successes. I mean, there's some real good talent coming through. And it looks like that same sort of scrum domination can continue for quite a while. Just your thoughts on the guys who are now going to take this forward, the Springbok jersey forward?
Yeah, I think with Ox and Gerard there, they've been showing in the last season, like, how good they can be and, like, how much dominance they can enforce in the scrum. But also, like, young guys, like, I think Jan Hendrik Wessel is an absolute athlete and he plays so well. I think his scrums are improving every week, especially when he scrums at Lucid. So I think the talent is there, and I think it's Don does such a great job when he has the guys in camp and training week. So I think the Oaks are geared and ready to go. So for me, it's like I'm happy where I'm leaving the jersey, and I'm happy about the guys who's coming in to fill that space. I think they're excellent rugby players, and I truly hope they make great success of their careers.
Even we should probably let you go. There's a lot to do still. Thank you, not just for coming onto this podcast, but thank you for serving South African rugby and Springbok rugby with such distinction. You've been part of a group of players that have made South Africans very happy the last number of years. So thank you for your service.
Thank you very much. No, I appreciate it.
I was going to say, same. I echo the sentiments there. The one last one I want to ask you. Always, I always throw one in at the mix there at the end. But you only scored 2 tries, I think, both against Italy, if I'm right.
Yeah.
And 5 years apart. You never danced for your tries like Trevor did or anything like that. You maybe wondered, did you want a few more? I mean, I know France doesn't have many as well, but he scored a couple for the Stormers of late. So,
yeah, no, 100%. I think only having 10 points in 83 test matches is not a nice stat to have, but like there was a lot of things I measured myself on. It wasn't just the scoring tries and scoring points and dancing and being on TV. It was like, I really enjoyed like making a crucial turnover at a breakdown or getting a massive scrum penalty. Like that was just as satisfying as running into the corner and dotting a try down. So would have loved to score a bit more, don't get me wrong, but there's other things I measured my game on, and tries wasn't one of them because I knew I didn't score a lot of them.
No, I know. But listen, thank you very much for coming on. I know you're a very busy man at this moment. We're probably going to get you back at some point when things quieten down and you focus a bit more on business. But thanks for making the time and enjoy the golf while you can. So,
thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Lewis.
Thanks, guys.
Another great Springbok riding off into the sunset. We obviously wish Stephen well. Much decorated, much feared, I suppose, as well, and revered. Springbok Pro.
Yeah, just a personal note, I can remember asking a certain SA Rugby official, in fact, it was the CEO at that stage, Yuri Roux, when Stephen Kitsoff came back from Bordeaux. He was still a young guy. He left the Stormers, went to Bordeaux, came back, and I still asked, why are we bringing this guy back? Should he have got enough props at the moment? And he said, well, Rossi believes this guy's going to be one of the best ever. And I can't argue with him now, what, 80 something tests later. So well done, Stephen, and yeah, it's been a pleasure watching you.
Absolutely. We wish him well.
Time to move on. We have a couple of, well, we have a big game locally, and we've got a couple of really big ones in the Six Nations. We should probably focus for the moment on the one in Durban. And it's a rematch of the one played last weekend at Ellis Park under, I suppose, trying circumstances for both teams, but in particular for the Sharks. You would have thought they would have handled the wet and the damp a little bit better than the Lions, but it was not to be. The Lions were certainly up for the fight and thoroughly put the Sharks to the sword.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I found quite interesting, just the way this result has left, and I know a lot of people don't take much notice of the Shield competition, but between the two, the South African sides, but that loss of the Sharks and the Stormers win at Loftus, left the Stormers at the top of the Shield blog at the moment, which the Sharks can still win and should still win if they win on Saturday, but it's just a weird thought. A couple of weeks ago, if somebody suggested the Stormers might win the South African Shield, I think we'd probably laugh at them. And it's just some interesting results. Of course, what those results did do, it left the door open for a top eight space for probably all four of the South African teams.
Yeah.
There's still a chance. And it comes down, Saturday's game is obviously rescheduled from round one. It's a big game. It's a massive game for both teams. And if you're the Sharks, you've got the Shields on the line, but for the Lions, they can move up into the top eight for that as well. And if they win their fourth consecutive game against the Sharks, there's some bragging rights going there as well.
Yeah, look, I mean, the Lions could be kingmakers, obviously. So the Stormers will be hoping they can repeat last week's performance. But the Lions also find themselves in a bit of a logjam because they are ninth. They're just outside the top eight at the moment. So a win is absolutely crucial. I think anything you play on South African soil, you know, you place a higher premium on that to get a result. So they won't lack for hunger this weekend, but to string two of those performances together, sort of back to back, is going to require a lot. The Sharks won in Durban last year, if I probably recall right.
I know the double. The double last year.
Isn't it the year before?
No, it was last year. I know these things blew. Well, not last, yeah. Last season.
Because I know they had the sequence here. It was first the Sharks, then the Lions, then the Sharks. Yeah, you're right. It's the Sharks, it's the double. So, Durban's going to be a tough place for them to win, but they've done it before. So it's not as if it's beyond the realms of possibility.
Yeah, I think as well, I mean, if you look at the Lions, you look at what's left in their season. They've got this game, and then they've got a week off, and then they go off, play Cardiff and Glasgow overseas, which is, they could probably win at least one of those two. Glasgow might be a bit difficult at that stage. It depends on how many of their Scottish players are back. And then they come back, and I think they've got four games to finish off the season at home. Four toughish games, but two of them against two Welsh clubs, so they'll probably back themselves to win those. But it's, yeah, they can give themselves a nice run in at the end there. If they get this one, they set themselves up quite nicely for that run, although it is quite bunched on that log at the moment, so every point is vital.
Yeah. And also some real incentive for the Sharks. A win, especially if it's a bonus point one, will have them snapping at the heels of the Bulls. They'll win the Shield, but they've also then got a clear goal in front of them in terms of the general lock.
Yeah, and I think also, I mean, mentally, I think people underestimate what this means for a team. The Sharks last year won the Challenge Cup. Obviously, not the big prize, but so any silverware is always. And when you get the bragging rights in South Africa as the best South African team as well, mentally, that's got to give you a boost. And, for a team as ambitious as the Sharks are with their owners, they'll certainly see it as the next step forward in a moral victory. But, there's 23 Lions standing in front of them before they can do that. And I was just surprised on Saturday how the Sharks just didn't pitch for that game. Yeah. It just almost felt, because as good as I wouldn't say the Lions were, I didn't think they were as exceptional. I thought they made quite a few mistakes, and it's just they were a lot more clinical than the Sharks. I was just quite surprised with where the Sharks were mentally in that game, because it didn't look like they were in that game for most of it.
Look, one of the Lions assistant coaches did make the point that this weekend's game will be a different game. So it's not they're not reading too much into last weekend. But, I mean, coaches will say that. It's hard to disagree, because it's the game's at the coast. It's against, your opponent. That's at your opponent's home ground. They will probably load their team a little bit. It'll be interesting to see who they go with in this game. But certainly a much tougher challenge for the Lions this week.
And the weather, I think, is going to make a difference as well. I see it looks like the rain has probably stopped in Durban. They've had a lot of rain, like most of the country in recent times. But it seems it's going to be hot and balmy this weekend, which is perfect for the Sharks if it's a humid game. Other teams don't really like those conditions very much. So it's going to be quite interesting to see how they handle it. But intriguing game, a 2 o'clock kickoff, which in that heat will definitely make a difference for the Lions and the Sharks.
Yeah. Another intriguing game, and this is very much north in the Northern Hemisphere. Potential Six Nations decider, Ireland hosting France. A real blockbuster affair.
I just want to interrupt you. Last year when this game was played, we were told by the commentators this was the World Cup final that everybody wanted to see, wasn't it?
I think that.
Nobody's talking like that this year.
Yeah, that's put. Yeah, I've been put firmly behind this.
Sorry, I couldn't resist.
But a good memory, Brendan, for those things. You know, that game on its own merits is certainly a blockbuster affair. There's no doubt whatsoever. Ireland did very well last year in the corresponding fixture because they went to Marseille, and the big question was, who of the two sides have put the World Cup blues behind them? And Ireland came out and answered that question with authority. I mean, they won well in Marseille and set themselves up for a Grand Slam challenge. This game, Grand Slam also very much still on the line. There's Grand Slam, and there's the fact that they could do the three-peat. Now, the three-peat is a very difficult thing. It'll be the first time it is achieved in the Six Nations. And there's a reason why it's so difficult, because, you know, teams tend to dive into the last hurdle, the final hurdle. So Ireland will be well aware of that. So I think the bookmakers will probably make them slight favorites. But I think they're going to be under enormous pressure. Not that France won't be, because there's huge expectation on Fabien Galtier to deliver more silverware. But I think Ireland will probably feel it more.
It's a very intriguing game, because if you look at the performances in recent times, you'd probably say Ireland are probably emotionally a bit more mature when it comes to these pressure situations. They tend to handle the pressure a lot better. And France, as emotional as we know they are, they can turn on moments of brilliance, but they have struggled in the corresponding fixtures in the last couple of seasons. So, yeah, I don't know. I think there's so much pressure on France as well to deliver something. It's going to be very tough for them in Dublin, but I wouldn't be surprised if somewhere I've got this feeling Ireland are probably not as good as they were last year. Not that they're a bad side in any means or measure, but they do have a few chinks in the armor. And you know, France are going to have to play damn well if they're going to win in Dublin, but they certainly have the personnel to do it.
It will have to be a sustained effort because they, as you rightly point out, that they have these moments in games where, you know, play is a bit of a dip. And of course, against Ireland, you can't afford that. But, you know, I think we've seen it as well. Those games involving France and South Africa, there's when they have a dip, it's not, you know, they still keep it together. They don't like drop their bundle like they used to, where you have moments of madness. They kind of still able to pick themselves up and go again. But they will be severely tested this weekend. See, Caelan Doris is likely to be back this weekend for Ireland as well. So, yeah, it's a fixture that I'm looking forward to.
Well, I think it's one of those where if you book with your bet with your head, you probably put money on Ireland to eke it at the end there. But I think if I had to go with my heart, I'd probably put some money on France.
You might also get half season odd. So you never know.
Yeah, and they are the type of team that if they're on the day, they can beat anybody anyway. So, it's an intriguing one. It's very close to, but Ireland should be favourites in this one.
Well, that takes us to Scotland.
Does anybody care about any other games this weekend?
I was thinking it, but I wasn't going to say it.
Sorry, the elephant in the room is, does any other game really matter? Because everybody else is playing for scraps at the moment. So, Scotland, Wales, I suppose the only question is, can Wales back up that performance? Scotland should be favourites on this one. I don't know. It's tough to back up a performance of emotion 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah, I mean, Wales will want to show it wasn't a flash in the pan and that they're on the road to something solid. So even if they lose, you'd still want them to put in a decent performance. And I think they're capable of that. Scotland, they haven't really hit all the high notes. I mean, they're a very capable side and they have these moments, but they're inconsistent.
I've said it before on our pod is that I sort of wonder if Gregor Townsend hasn't just taken them as far as he can take them. And this is not me advocating for Franco Smith to take over the job, but I think maybe some fresh ideas might help them. I still think they're probably favorites this weekend, but you'd expected a lot more from them from some of the other games as well. So, I don't know. I'd pick Scotland to win this one. I don't think I'm very excited about the game, to be very honest.
Well, if you are underwhelmed by the prospect of Scotland against Wales, what is your disposition towards the England-Italy match?
I probably have better things to do on Sunday. I will probably end up watching it. But if only to answer the question for myself when I read the British papers on Monday and see how Marcus Smith's the world's best whatever, and how Ben Earl is the best flank in the world, and how every other player's doesn't have an equal across the rugby world, as they tend to do that. They'll win handsomely, England. I think they're in a good spot at the moment, but not much. I can't see Italy. Italy need a response after their French game. I'm not sure they have it.
Absolutely. I mean, to suffer a defeat like that on home soil is, but it's not to be done, not to be recommended.
Nah.
Well, that's the next key of that. Would you care to give a prediction in terms of a victory, Mark?
I don't think England will be spectacular, but they'll probably win comfortably. So probably by about 14 points, I reckon. It'll be a scrappy game. I don't see it.
Well, kind of
something like that, yeah. Maybe a bit higher. Maybe a bit higher. But yeah, I can't see them losing. And Scotland, Wales, I can see Scotland winning comfortably as well, also by more than score. So probably about 10, 12 points. So,
yeah.
But well, it's an easy fixture list this week. It's an easy fixture
list. Yeah, it is. Absolutely. That's it, folks. We will hopefully be with you next week, and we will probably have a bit more to talk about, more than this week, Brendan. And let's try and have a good week.
Oh, it's going to be a very interesting weekend. So enjoy it. We'll chat next week, and see you then. Cheers.
Ciao.
Thanks for listening. For the latest insights and rugby analysis each week, plus new episode alerts, please follow or subscribe to the series. Or find all episodes at jacarandafm.com or the Jackpot app. That is wild!